How much the Buddha? How much the Dharma? How much the Sangha? So my Dharma talk today is on building Sangha. So I ask you to call to mind how you think of this Zen Center, how you think of Bright Way. Probably grateful for a place to come and meditate, enjoy learning about Buddhism and practice, appreciate the moral support of practicing with others. It's hard to practice on our own. Maybe you've even gotten to know a few people personally or think of them as friends. Of course, there are other places to meditate and learn about Buddhism, especially in Portland. And maybe you like this one best, or maybe it's conveniently located for you. And we're in the model of Dharma Rain, which that's the name of the Zen center where I trained. And that took its name from a metaphor in the Lotus Sutra, where they talk about the rain of Dharma just falls on beings and plants of all different sizes and shapes, and each one takes what it needs. So Dharma Rain's model was really to just offer with open hands, not have a sense like you got to sign up for some particular program, or, you know, if you're here twice a week, you know, you're a better practitioner if you only show up once a month, or, you know, it's just take what you need and we do our own practice. We don't judge other people's practice. We don't know the lives and circumstances of other people. Some people feel deeply connected to and dependent on this community, even though they rarely are able to come, or maybe there's a long period of time they can't come, or maybe they're not in a position to contribute time and financial support or something like that. So this means you are welcome to view the Zen Center as basically providing a service to you, kind of like, you know, a yoga studio. Like, you know, you like what you get, it supplements your life, you know, enjoy it, that kind of thing. So 2 years ago, we did a survey of Bright Way Zen members, and we had 39 regular participants who answered. And there was a question: I participate with Bright Way Zen in order to. And then these were the top five. I mean, there's a limitation to this kind of survey because, you know, an open-ended question is difficult to kind of analyze the results of. But when you give people a choice list, then you're kind of limiting it from the beginning, right? You can't think of everything. But anyway, it was a pretty long list of things you might be coming to Bright Way Zen for. And the top five that people said, because you had to rate them in order of like, this doesn't really apply or this definitely applies. Sit Zazen with others, inspire and motivate my practice, foster and nourish my connection with the ineffable or divine. Third one, interestingly, increase my equanimity and compassion, and learn more about Buddhism and Zen. And further down the list, about 56% said, connect with community definitely applies to me. And about 34% said, make friends definitely applies to me. So those, you know, people didn't say it didn't matter at all, but they were definitely down the list. So there's a way that we can ask, you know, how does the Zen Center serve me? How much of its service is worth to me? How much is it offering? And the board, the leadership of the Zen Center, has similarly approach things in this way, in the sense that we took that survey and we said, okay, well, it's all these things that people would value maybe adding or having at the Zen Center, and, you know, seeing how people care about them helps us prioritize, you know, which ones should we add first in order to provide a, you know, to serve our members better. Now, again, I'm not making judgments. Everyone is welcome to be part of the Sangha as long as they do their best to keep the precepts and treat others with respect. But today, I want you to consider another possibility for what our Sangha could be. And I'm going to start by reading you an email from a Zen teacher, Ann Myosho Kyle Brown. She studied with Akiba Roshi, a Japanese teacher down in Oakland. And she had a little Zen center in Northern California. And recently, there's been a back and forth on my priest's email list. Somebody posted something about the California fires and climate change, and then I chimed in and said, anybody had any luck motivating their sanghas to really take action on climate change? You know, would love to know what has worked for you, and we'll talk about it, you know, maybe in a video conference or something. So people have been responding to me, and a couple of the people were checking in because there's a lot of Zen centers in California. So she chimed in with this. She said, "Dear Dharma colleagues, one additional experience to consider about the Sonoma fires and other extreme weather events," because it all started with an article by Rebecca Solnit on the fires. "Komedo, the Mendocino Zen Center, is on the north coast of California." And I asked her if I could read this today. "So far, it has not been consumed by the fires of the last few years. The redwoods are a great buffer zone, hard to leap over ancient trees that sprouted during Charlemagne's reign. Still, the threat was and is real. The week before last, all power went out in a prepared response by the state utility company. For all of the community's planning, generators, hand crank radios, bathtubs full of water, dry goods, propane and wood stoves, etc., we were still unprepared because no one knew it would last so long. Unprecedented. Millions of people were impacted for almost a week. On the coast and even inland, thousands of homes and businesses also lost their telephone landlines. That means thousands and thousands of rural people were cut off from each other and all news and possible alerts to danger. There were long lines at the one gas station from 30 to 60 minutes away, and finally no assurance of enough gas to warrant the round trip. And perhaps most frighteningly, no ability to use the water in home wells to defend private and community properties. The citizen water bucket brigades of yore are no longer direct memories of the living. In the 20 years of Komedo's existence, there has never been a loss of telephone service. AT&T apparently ran out of gas for their generators. It's hard to fight fire and fear with darkness, silence, and isolation. Once power was restored, people rushed to connect with each other, to share their experience, and buy more generators, as another planned outage was set for 3 days later. It was canceled hours before it was set to commence. If we expand the definition of Sangha to include everyone in a community, then we need to consider the effect of isolation on everyone. Town leaders, first responders, hospital staff, the one or two open restaurants with generators, etc. They were all truly upset. First and foremost with themselves, that they had thought they had more grit and can do. Then if we consider elderly or infirm folks who didn't have backup systems in place. At a senior's residential compound, for instance, they were only allowed to have electrical stoves and heaters, and the compound's generators were only for the clubhouse. Overnight, people layered in all their winter clothes and were cold, frightened, and coming down with colds, flus, etc. So there was that which is burned, there is that which is burned, flooded, or blown asunder. And then there is that which is plunged into isolation and the unknowable unknown. I think about the old days when no one had electricity and most folks were rural. There were strong bonds and protocols in place to keep everyone safe and connected. Not dissimilar from the African American churches, schools, and networks that were in place before the civil rights movement and integration. The loss of those community bonds, protocols, institutions, and networks because they were perceived as no longer necessary are impossible to rebuild in the short term, but must be addressed. Our communities are spread out and scattered. The internet is not a warm, outreaching hand of rescue. A few years back, I grew older and tired of all the pastoral work conducted so far from any Zen colleagues and institutions. So Kumedo closed for a time. In reopening, I thought that this time there would be greater focus on those more singularly focused on practice, a simple lay and monastic center for serious practitioners. But pastoral work is environmental work, is Zen work. Simple is complex. The moment is endless. I need to reconsider Kumedo's future. So, Sangha, in our terms, means community. And there's a wonderful book that I haven't had the chance to read all of yet called The Art of Community, Seven Principles for Belonging by Charles Vogel. And he says, this is quote, "I define a community as a group of individuals who share a mutual concern for one another's welfare. It's distinct from a group whose members may share ideas, interests, proximity, or any number of things, but lack concern for one another. Such groups can have huge memberships, like the Museum of Modern Art, the American Medical Association, or Greenpeace, but their members do not share any strong social connectedness. Robert Putnam, a political scientist at Harvard, says it best. They root for the same team, and they share some of the same interests, but they are unaware of each other's existence. Their ties, in short, are to common symbols, common leaders, and perhaps common ideals, but not to one another." So few of us in modern society have community beyond our family. I mean, family ties is great, although some of us, you know, live far from family or for one reason or another don't have great family ties. But very few of us have community beyond family. We have like one member of our community now who lives in an intentional community, you know, where like you buy your condo and it's understood that you're part of this community. And he's very involved in that. So whenever we end up talking about community, he's like, I'm part of a community. And for a lot of the time, we don't, and Vogel in his book talks about the breakdown of these community connections. And for a large part, it's just because we don't think it's necessary. I have everything I need. My husband John talks about growing up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and you know, not that small a town, but a small city, I guess, and how you just got to know people and tolerated people because you never knew when you were going to need them. You never knew when it was going to be 30 below and your car stuck in the snowbank, and they're the ones that come along. So there's a kind of mutual need that brings us together. So it's really like, ironically, the more material wealth and higher standard of living, the lower the community connections, because you just don't need it. I don't need to find out if my neighbors have a cup of sugar, you know. I live like 5 minutes from Winco. I can get it myself, you know? So how do we create community? I mean, it takes a shift in terms of how we relate, and this is all voluntary, of course, but how we relate to something like the Zen Center, where we show up not just for ourselves, but we show up for others. I mean, we all know how nice it is to like walk in and there's like a bunch of people. Like it just, It just makes it easier to sit and easier to come and easier to wrestle with Dharma. We give each other support just by showing up. Yesterday we had a potluck, and there were only six of us, even though we have like 66 pledging members and many more people who are involved with the Zen Center than just official members. And some of the refrains I heard was people saying, you know, they had overheard people saying, well, I don't want to come because last time there was just a few people. And like, you know, so it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy then, where it's like, I don't know, personally, I'm fine with talking with six people. You can't really talk to more than six people anyway. But showing, I mean, it's tricky because our modern lives, I think most of us feel, are like very overfull and kind of stressful and all that. So we're kind of loath to have another sense of obligation to something. So I think there's this kind of like, you know, I don't want to feel obligated to yet another thing. But that's kind of why I'm giving this talk, is just to make the argument for why that can be very rewarding. Why, yes, some kind of obligation and time and investment is worth it. I mean, frankly, community can be a big pain in the ass. I mean, we used to have two members that lived in that intentional community. Now we only have one because one of them was like, ah, okay, I'm done. You know, it's dealing with people. It's you know, a requirement on your time. It's, you know, everything. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people who are thinking like, okay, we have this annual members meeting. And I thought it was very clever. I noticed Sato from the Eugene Zendo, she calls her annual meeting their annual Sangha celebration. Because most people are just like, a business meeting. I don't need to go to some business meeting. You know, all I'm interested in, I'm just like, oh, no, I'm going to meditate. I got enough stuff going on in my life. So, you know, people don't want to just like, I don't want to be responsible. I don't want to worry about how the rent is paid or, you know, how Domio eats or anything like that. I just, you know, whatever. I'll just let other people deal with that and I'll show up. I understand that impulse. But, you know, I mean, just like all of our relationships, significant others, family, friends, if we don't spend the time, if we don't invest in them, then they're not very strong relationships. So invest a time and energy into our community, not just for its own sake, and not hopefully you enjoy it, but it's not all about enjoying it. Not just because you get something out of it, but also in order to strengthen the community. I was really struck by how there seemed to be a pattern at Dharma Rain for a while that, like, I don't know, they come for a while because essentially they're suffering, right? And they get strong enough in practice that, you know, some of that is alleviated. You know, so then they're like, I don't know, I don't necessarily need to come so often. And then all the way up to somebody would be transmitted as a teacher. Like, they've done the whole deal. They can pass this on, and then they would just kind of disappear. Or unless they were going to show up and when they gave a talk or something like that. But I was always so touched and supported by one of our teachers, Getsushin, older Norwegian lady. She would just still show up to practice, wearing her blue robe, her brown robe. She would just come and be there. And I felt supported by her just being there, by her having done all this practice and still being devoted to it and still being devoted to the Sangha. Now, most of us, like, are like, I mean, I don't suffer from this, but I imagine almost everybody else at a certain time is like, what does the Sangha care if I show up? One of the things that helps is if you have a job. There's probably a good like five people here today who may or may not have been here except they had some kind of job. But it's kind of a way to get yourself tapped into this sense of like, you matter, your presence matters. I always loved that sense of like, well, even if you wonder, do I belong? I don't know. But if you like, hey, I'm the one that has to turn the tea water on, like I belong. So we spend time, we show up, we participate. We participate in term student and tell our stories, and we give back, we do service, we clean the Zendo, we serve on the board of directors, we there's a strategic plan, and okay, what is that? And there's people who need to help out with certain aspects of it. To develop a sense of ownership and belonging of our community. And here's something that I don't think I've been very good at inviting, but I aspire to be. I'm not sure how, but I want to inspire people to contribute skills, ideas, passion, creativity. And not because I've dreamed up something for you to do, and I said, oh, I remember, Suzanne has that skill. Suzanne, would you do this? But like, no, this is your sangha. And if you look and you think, like, you know what we ought to have? Then, like, see about doing it. What can you contribute? How can you make it a better place? Because that's where, like, your enthusiasm is fire is going to be anyway. I don't usually find all that much enthusiasm when I just delegate tasks to people. They're like, oh, okay, fine, I did it, you know. But when people come up with their own, like, Marcia decided we needed a children's program. I didn't ask her to do that. She just decided it. And now every Wednesday she teaches mindfulness for preschoolers, and she's coordinating our once a month children's program. And now we have little kids running around during our tea break. And so it's enriched our community. She just looked and said, you know what you guys need. And maybe we actually make plans for how to come together in an emergency, like Myosha was talking about. I just spent 2 months on the Tuesday class of Active Hope, hoping to inspire people to find some way to take action in response to climate change. But a lot of times we get stuck in, okay, that means rallies, or that means, politics or something like that. But one of the things a beautiful description I heard of, like, and that we may be facing a time of great instability and change. We may be facing a time of more and more of like this failure of infrastructure. And at this time, efforts to strengthen and to build the resilience of our communities and our institutions, our democracy, like that is also like climate work in a way. This is also facing that so we will not completely descend into brutal anarchy if we face something difficult, that we'll have some strength and connections. And then there's also, in terms of like personal, we don't want to think of it as transactional in terms of, however much you give to the Zen Center, you're going to get this much out. But there is a certain aspect of it where the more that you give, the more that you are involved, the more naturally the community is going to want to reach out and support you. I mean, my example recently, Frankie is one of our long-term members, and she's been having hip pain. She had to go through hip surgery. She could hardly walk for a while. And at the exact same time, she needed to move. So it was a really tricky time. And Sangha members, cooked her food and went over and helped her move. And she was very touched by the response. And I was relieved to hear that she was touched, because Sanghas aren't always great at doing that. Sometimes we really let people fall through the cracks, and perhaps more often than not, we do. But kind of the stronger the relationships you've built, the more naturally people, it's not going to be some bright way Zen organized, like, who is that? That's me? I didn't organize that support for Frankie. People just care about her because she's been part of the community. She's participated. She's been a board member. She organized our fundraiser. And we didn't, you know, it's not like you thought, like, well, she's given a lot to the Zen Center, so I should probably give her a call. It's just, oh, Frankie, you know, it's because she built up such strong relationships, then it felt very natural to support her. So I just, I encourage you to, I don't know, if you want connection and you want support, then, I don't know, in this context, actually giving and seeing how you can support others is often the way to that. So there was one outlier on our survey. It was an answer to the question, what would you like to see at Brightway Zen in the future? And people rated like, I don't really care, all the way to like, I would love to see this. And the highest one was, I'd like to help make that happen. And, you know, on the list was like, you know, more Dharma talks, session, one-day retreats, kind of things that you would expect. But at the top, clearly at the top, by a long shot, was long-term stability. 30% said, I would love to see this, and 21% said, I'd like to help make that happen. And this is a, you know, big statement to, like, that's that kind of thing I was talking about, like, investing and hoping. So how does this happen? How does our long-term stability happen? And to some extent, I'm not sure. Our Sangha makes that happen. Our Sangha decides how, you know, we have unique circumstances. We can look at other Zen centers or whatever, but we figure out how to make that happen. A couple of things that would probably help a lot is to someday have our own place. It's a big step. We don't know when that's going to be, but to have a physical place of refuge. I mean, just think about that. Think about in an emergency, you know, maybe things are falling down and it's not livable where you are, but you could come to the Zen Center. I mean, we could kind of do that here, but we don't own this building. Who knows what the owners would, you know, if we said, like, well, we're going to have a whole bunch of people sleeping and camping out here and, you know, bringing in some stoves or, I don't know. I mean, like, we don't necessarily have that option. And, you know, a home of our own someday would include a kitchen, could include supplies to get us through an emergency, could include that kind of infrastructure. And then also working to be sustainable. And that means support for teachers and staff. You know, I'm doing this out of a labor of love. Shintai's doing it out of a labor of love. And that is lovely. I'd be happy to do this for free for my whole life. But we all know that life doesn't work that way. I'm sure doctors and nurses and therapists would also like to work for free, and teachers. But that, you know, we all need to eat and live. So these things are not just for their own sake. This is so our community can grow strong and stable. And it does involve some visioning. And exactly how to go about that visioning, we're not quite sure. I mean, in the one sense, you know, sometimes we could, if we think too small, we think like, oh, now we need money and we're gonna, you know, we're gonna have to buy a place and blah, blah, blah. But if you kind of keep your eye on the vision, which I don't know if many realize, sometimes people aren't familiar with the vision. You're familiar with coming and having a place to sit and, you know, availing yourself of some services like a yoga studio, which is okay. You know, my vision, and I really would love to go on a field trip with folks down to the Eugene Zendo, because frankly, I just want everything that they have. It is absolutely perfect. It is exactly what, it's the scale I want. It's built slowly over the last 20 years, but they're in a neighborhood. And if you put this kind of thing in a neighborhood, there's all kinds of legal hoops you have to jump through. You need conditional use permits to be in a residential space. This hasn't been that easy. But they started with a house, a really weird house that was built like a bunker. It was very strange. And then they like converted the garage to the Zendo, and the priest lived upstairs with his family. And then they gradually expanded, and it's a pretty big piece of property. And now, I haven't been down there for a while, but I believe they've expanded their Zendo. They have a yurt in the backyard for classes. They have a beautiful fig tree and other things growing on the property. They have a kind of a community garden that, like, the neighbors, you know, you can just walk in and sit on the bench. So it's very inviting. It's not like, you know, here's the Zen Center and we've got these walls and, you know, you can't come in. It's very, it's human scale, but it has all the elements that you need for a Zen Center. A kitchen, they can have little retreats there. And the priest lives just a few doors down the street. And they, you know, they're still growing. They're still working on finding ways to make themselves financially sustainable. But they're, you know, they're good like 15 years ahead of us. So this is what I just, it is a community center. And to some extent, this is what Dharmarain was and is as well. A community center. So that, I mean, they usually have some kind of closed time to give the residents a break. But that's only like one day of the week. The rest of the time, if you have some spare time and you just want to come and read some Zen books, or you just want to come and join some meditation, if you want to come for a meal, the community has meals together. If you want to come and work in the garden. So it's a place of refuge for anyone, for any of the members at pretty much any time, let alone in a time of need. So this is the kind of, I don't know if our Sangha will want this vision. I hope that I can rouse people for it. Because that is stability. When you look around and you see the Christian churches and the Lutheran churches, I mean, they've been there for ages. And a large part of that is because at some point they got their foot in the door and they got a building. They got a place. Now a place, I mean, you could, you know, if you neglect the Dharma and you neglect everything else, a place isn't, you know, worth crap. But the place is, you know, just like, I mean, we build the wealth of families by you know, having a house and, you know, being able to pass that on to our children. Similarly, a religious community builds equity through that. Because I would like us to, I mean, people have their lives change, they have to move and whatever, but hopefully we will know one another for decades. That we will keep each other company in our old age, and that we will conduct funerals for each other. And yes, we're all busy. Family takes a lot of our time. taking care of ourselves and our responsibilities, etc. I mean, isn't this just another thing to add to your to-do list? Another obligation? And you could look at it that way, and if you do, probably won't inspire you. Or you could look at this as an optional, open-ended opportunity. You know, sometimes people are like, what should I do in my life? What could be more fulfilling? How could I give something back? Well, here. You could do it here. Sometimes people will, might say something like that, and people are like, well, okay, then, well, how? It's like, I don't know. Like, I could, that just adds to my workload of trying to think, like, how would I incorporate everybody? That makes me responsible for it all. Whereas it's like, I can do a lot, but I can't build community. I mean, I can't single-handedly build. I can build a nice Zen center with lots of services and programs, but I can't make community happen. So I'll just end with a little quote by Vogel again. When we do find people who share at least some of our values, there's a real opportunity for friendship. It doesn't matter if this is at work or on our block or while volunteering in a distant country. Building community creates a venue for friendship, and friendship defeats loneliness. In deep community, we can be vulnerable and still know that we belong. Those of us who are able to connect what may be a new lonely generation will have a profound effect on the health and well-being of those we serve, no matter why we bring people together. I unwittingly started this journey because I was desperate to find a community for me. I promise you that I continue because I've learned how important it is for all of us to know that we belong. So I'll leave it at that. Any questions or comments?
Well, I'm really, really glad that you said that, because ever since the first time I came here, I was always like, no, you know, make this even better. It's a better sense of community. Well, I'll just keep showing up when I can. I'm sure eventually we'll get there. Because I was like, because I knew that it was a new place, and it takes time to build that. So it was something that I've been looking forward to, and so thrilled about this. The other thing I want to point out that's really special about this place as a community, because I was involved with another organization for a while. As both a type, but the point that drove me away from there was that I really felt like it was demanding and controlling, and I'm not into that. As you get to know me, you'll see. I'm a very dominant personality, but not domineering. I don't care what anybody else does, that's their business, but I've got my own way I do things. And I'm not good at being told what to do. I'm not good at following the group. I'm not good at that. I'm good at not being a jerk. I'm good at not showing up places drunk. And I'm good at helping other people feel like they belong, and maybe like bringing a meal to somebody who's sick if I can get to you, if you don't live too far away or something. That stuff, yes. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that what you're saying is not a big ask as far as how to make a community. It really isn't. You're asking people to give what they can when they can, when it's them, whether it's financial or their talents or their time. I noticed that there's no hard and fast rule. There was no kind of judgment. There was no kind of if you, then this. There's just kind of, you know, an invitation. And I really like how it's so open-ended. It's so flexible. And I've known you for years now, and you have never once made me feel like you were trying to control me, and I've been able to tell you anything and always come away feeling like I had a better understanding and knew myself more, not knew a dogma more. So that's why I'm here, and I'm really excited about this being more of a community.
I'd like to say
something.
I really loved this talk. People have heard me say, I love this community, and I do. Despite my outward appearance, I'm really not a very good conversationalist. In fact, I hate it. In fact, I just as soon sit in the corner and let everybody else do the talking. I want to put a plug in for having a little job of some kind, because that forces you into a situation. It's very hard for me, despite the fact that I say I love my community, to deal with all of you at once. It's much easier to start talking to the four or five people who get here on Tuesday night at 6 or 6:15, or those who stay later and close things up. There's a lot of good discussion and back and forth, and this is how we do it going on. I will share something that I shared with Damio. I was at a retreat at Great Bow over the weekend, last weekend, and we were doing our closing circle. Many of you know what that is, where everybody speaks for a minute about how things went for them. And one woman, Kodo, who some of you know from Heart of Wisdom, said she was out walking behind the buildings after lunch or after supper or something, and just became overwhelmed with how grateful we all should be to have that place. As some of you may know, it's made out of an elementary school, and if you don't know that, you will figure out right away. But they do such wonderful events there. I have learned so much there, and I have met such wonderful people. And here I am, living in Portland, and an hour and a half away is the place of refuge I can go to for extended periods of time. And they reminded me that I am so lucky to have this place here, because it's great to go to Great Bow on a weekend or for a week every now and then, which is what I do. But I get to come here 2 times a week. It's not always 2 times a week. Actually, 3 times a week, but it's definitely not always 3 times a week. But it's so close by. I mean, I'm not the kind of person who, and Portland traffic's getting horrible. Who wants to cross the river and go to all the wonderful Zen communities that are there that we should also be grateful for, when I've got one so close to me here? I'll add 2 more things. The 3-year-old refuge's prayer means a lot to me, as do the 4 great Bodhisattva vows. But the one at the end about supporting harmony and community, you know, Damio used to tell me when I was kind of new that the Sangha was like a family. And I come from one of those families that I don't see often for a reason. I was lost, that definition was lost on me, until I realized that we're all individuals, we're all different people. We have our ups and downs, but in the end, we come together for a potluck, or for a Christmas party, or for a general meeting where we're gonna learn a lot of stuff. So I really love the prayer, may all meetings support harmony in the community. And the final thing I will say was, I was there when Frankie was talking about the gratitude she had for the way she was supported. She was overwhelmed. And it was just so wonderful to hear that. So this place may not have all those meanings for you now, but someday it will have all those meetings, little by little, and I hope you will really feel that. I pray that for everyone.
All the way through what you were talking about, I kept thinking the one thing that you don't have is geography. I'm thinking of Eugene. That sounds like a community. This is not a community for me, because I need time to drive 45 minutes to get here. If I come to a weeknight meeting, I have to be careful, because 217, I have a standard transmission, and in 217, I can get down into first gear and not be able to get out for a while. So I come once a week on Sundays because the traffic is good. Mm-hmm. The community is fabulous, and I do feel like I'm a member. But one of the things that's really kept me here is the Zen Studies podcast and the stuff that's also available online, because I can participate from my computer upstairs, and my commute is one flight of stairs. So in that sense of community, I don't think that I'm typical. I think I'm, you know, kind of a satellite person, but I feel really like a participant. But I wouldn't want more activities at the center. It wouldn't serve me. You know, I would want more virtual activities that I could participate in without driving, especially if you want to talk about climate change and reducing your carbon footprint. So, and I do cross the river to get here, by the way. So, just way down in Oregon City is where I cross the river. So I'm not saying that that isn't a good goal, but there are individuals for whom some parts of that don't resonate the same as for other people. And I just wanted to throw that out, not because it's changing my commitment to being a member here, but it, you know, one of my rules is I come here once a week. That's one of the reasons that I think the after Dharma talk lunch is so important, because I've already driven the time, and I'm already going to have to drive the same time back. I might as well, you know, capitalize on the interpersonal community that I can get while I'm here. So I just wanted to throw that out, because it's a...
Well, here's one thing that just springs to my mind, is for... I got really into Zen when I was in graduate school, I wasn't in graduate school yet, between college and graduate school. And I started going to Dharmarine Zen Center, and I just couldn't get enough, and I wanted to, you know. And then I moved to Corvallis to do my master's. So I listened to they were cassette tapes at that point, and I felt like I knew everybody, because I'd heard they didn't really know who I was, but, you know, I knew what was going on and knew everybody. And I was able to go, every other weekend, I went and stayed at the Zen Center. I went and spent at least one night, sometimes two, to just be there, to just participate in the program, to have breakfast with the teachers and the residents and whoever showed up. Just saying. That's another possibility, you know, if we do have a place.
The Tuesday night thing. I do participate on Tuesday night, but I don't come here in person. So sweet. I think that the virtual things that you make available, I didn't mean to say those aren't valuable, because they really are. But making, you know, getting a center here in Beaverton area isn't going to change some of that for me.
You never come stay overnight? I don't mean to put you on the spot. But,
insurance is the thing about if we all don't have electricity and we all don't have water, then the people who live next door to me are
right. Yeah, I mean, we have to build different kinds of community. And this is, you know, not the final solution for everybody.
But
go ahead.
In times of need, I think people would be checking on you to see how you're doing, number one. Okay. And number two, we don't know where we're going to be whenever the time comes that we have to leave this wonderful little spot.
This is a good spot.
I mean, it could be anywhere. I mean, our mission is committed to supporting, to spreading the Dharma in Washington County, but it could be anywhere in Washington County. It could be closer to you in Washington County.
Or maybe in the emergency, we'll think, doesn't Pat have some land?
Yes.
We should all go see what it's like. How you doing? How's your well working, you know?
So I will leave it there, but I just, I mean, in a way, if there's more that you want to say, I mean, please consider, I don't know, maybe we can FaceTime you into the members meeting or something like that. I don't know.
Come to lunch if you want to continue this conversation.
Well, come to lunch, talk it about amongst yourselves, and really, one of the things that I think I am learning, and part of this is through my new, like, attempt to be a climate activist and trying to work with people in a different way, is recognizing how if you're trying to do something and you don't have buy-in, like, you're kind of going about it wrong. Like, you've probably gone too far down the road and said, this is what we want to have happen, you want to help me, versus more collaborative, which also means less control, which also means, like, what should we do? So in a way, I feel like in order to build more community and get more investment, then I also need to be just more open. What should we do? So I'm hoping that we have that kind of open conversation on Tuesday.
I'll make it brief. I first met you in Zen Center at Page and Laguna in a room where Suzuki Roshi started his sangha about 56, 57 years ago. And now there's three beautiful centers, Tassajara, where I believe you study, mm-hmm. Marine Gulch. I'm moving up here, but I'm moving to Vancouver, Washington, and I am driving here for a couple of reasons. One, your commitment to climate change. And two, when I checked around my little part of the world, back in San Francisco, all my Zennies, pretty much everybody said this was the place to be.
Oh my God!
Yeah. So I hope, and you did two things this morning, that that every time I hear you speak, synchronicity at the wing. Two things. One, you offer this community an opportunity to say, are we going to make this into something? And you came out of a bigger Zen Center, so there's some things that are already known, so there's a little bit of thread that can be followed. So I'm worried about commuting here, but I'm here, I've been here twice now, this is my second time, and this is the Zen Center I want to make my new home, and I've been at the other one for over a decade. So thank you for your leadership.
Thank you for being here.
Judith.
Just briefly, I was part of a community in Maine in my checkered career, and it was started by a defrocked Catholic nun named Sister Lucy Poulin, and she became kind of notorious on the East Coast. And she started out by getting kicked out of the sisters retreat, wherever they lived, now it's escaping me, Carmelite. They don't have anything to do with community outside of their little community. But she was finding work for them at the local shoe factories and bringing it back. And while doing that, she... local poor women approached her and wanted to make shoes in their homes, and she had the nerve to talk to them about how to do it, and so the church kicked her out, the sisters did, and then the church made her a nun at large because they thought she was doing good work. And that's what she had, and she has built up a little empire in that area of Maine that is sheer community. And those of us who worked for her used to wonder about it, and I think part of what was going on was that people were very attracted to her, and we just knew that none of us would ever attract that many people. We got land, we got buildings, we got... And so there's a charismatic thing going on with the leader. So are you charismatic? Anyway.
I don't think so, because I'm still doing pretty much everything myself. I mean, but to some extent, I think that's exactly it. We had a Zen Center in Portland just recently dissolve because it was so dependent on the teacher. Yeah. He owned the place. And because he hadn't really, I don't know, shared power. I don't know if you put it like it wasn't a collaborative thing. So basically, when he disappeared, it was gone. I don't know at this point. I would like to think that Bright Way Zen would go on. I would like to think Shintai would step up, but she works full time and has a aging mother and a commitment to another Zen center as well. So like, I don't know. But I think that is, and that's what my teachers, Kyogen and Gyokuko, also their goal. It wasn't growth for growth's sake. It was a maturing and growth so that a community was stable enough that it could outlast any individual. So that's what we're going for. I'm not saying that I am really great at it. I'm really great at, like, you know, forging ahead and doing stuff because I don't want to wait around for everybody. But anyway, that's a weakness sometimes. I better wrap it up. Oh, oh, carpool. Okay. Oh, and also just there was that little plug to having a job. See Shoketsu if you would like to help with the opening and closing. Very simple, sweet job, because we should really have two closers for every time. And so we could use a couple more. It's a beautiful little, and you could probably even help close today if you wanted to start learning the job.
I'm doing it, so.
There you go. See Suzanne.
And actually, going to lunch, people are probably going to have to close up today before we go over.
So everybody can get out of here sooner. Right. Yeah. All right, so I'll do the formal ending of our talk. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Mm-hmm.